volunteer.
Usu for Workers is a program dedicated to exposing exploitation and helping workers who are mistreated, abused, underpaid and facing injustice in their workplace.
Presented by Usu for Workers Union, we're your hosts, Matt McCartan and Izzy Kane.
Kia ora, welcome to Usu for Workers Hour on Planet FM, an hour dedicated to hearing real workers' stories and winning justice. I'm your host, Izzy Kane, and with me in the studio is your other host, Matt McCartan. So we have a show packed with cases, updates, interviews, employment rights information, some music, and always, our goal is to protect our workers and provide advice and help where we can. So our kaupapa at Usu for Workers Union is to end exploitation and abuse whilst always maintaining the mana of our workers. So to expand on that a little bit more, the use of utu is deliberate. We summarise it in Māori terms as being justice. So when a victim is exploited or abused, their mana has been diminished and it must be restored. That is utu, and we also quite like how it's an acronym that stands for United Trade Unionists. So ultimately, our goal as a union is to build a mass movement to stop exploitation, migrant and non-migrant, and end unchecked workplace abuse that non-unionised workplaces, routinely suffer. So as the first step, we have to actually help individual workers with their immediate problems. So we provide representation to any worker from non-unionised workplaces who needs help. So our show, Utu for Workers Hour specifically, aims to provide a voice to often unheard workers and shed light on the endemic exploitation, which sadly occurs in New Zealand. So to that end, we'll kick off the show by telling you about a couple of new cases and follow that up with a guest interview for someone who's come on today to talk to us about the nurses' strike that happened across the country last week. So do stay tuned in for that. But for now, I'm with Matt here. Hello, Matt.
Kia ora, Izzy. Nice to be here.
So just going to dive in with a new case we have. You want to tell us about it?
So the first case I want to talk about is, listeners will know, when you go into the malls and you see people in the malls who are wanting to sell you or ask you for donations and pledges.
Oh, yeah, they wear the vests and hold the buckets.
Those people. Well, I've just really trying to understand how that works. I never really paid much attention to it, but these people are paid a commission. So what happens, they normally employ people who are on temporary visas or visitors.
Okay.
And what they do is they engage them and then they get somewhere around about a third of what they get you to give. So they'll say, we're doing, for world peace or, saving the planet of some sort, for poverty. And so they pay these sellers normally about a third. So if you give them $20, they try and get you onto a pledge, and they get paid. The more your pledge goes on, the more they pay them.
Okay.
So if you give them $20 a month or something, then they get a third of that, and so on and so on.
What type of worker would that be? Would that be casual or
So that's the point, right? So in New Zealand, we're not allowed to just have commission agents, right? So these people are paid on commission. In the old days, you could just do that. Now you've got to pay at least the minimum wage for the hours they work. So the minimum wage is $20 an hour, and you must pay at least that. So you can be a commission. So you go out and sell houses or cars or this. You still have to get a minimum of $20 an hour.
So it's commission on top of wage as well?
No, commission as a minimum, they get paid minimum wage. So, for example, I had a worker, had been working for a company for a month, had done, and they're on call, like casual employees. So they're not agents or contractors, they're employees, casuals. So what that means is they can work any time, they can turn down a shift, but they're available and they say, right, we're going to go out to the St. Luke's Mall this week on Saturday, then we're going to go to the Manukau Mall on Sunday or so on and so on. And then the workers say, yep, I can do that or I can't do that. So then they go out there, they meet out there, they give them their training and their clipboards and away they go. And they hustle. And that they must get paid. So this worker had worked for 87 hours. So at $20 an hour, he gets $1,600 or whatever it is, about 17. No, it was actually $1,890 because I know because I put a claim in for it. So this worker had only got about $450 in wage and commission. So it was less than the minimum wage. So this is really, if people know people are doing this, I think it's really important because people are unaware of, for the hours they work, they get the minimum wage. Now, in this instance, the company hadn't kept the hours. And so they go, oh, we don't have any idea, they're not commission agents. They are casual employees. And so they didn't keep the hours. And so when their company doesn't keep the hours, the worker, if they keep the hours, that's what the hours are. So within reason. And so the case is pretty open and shut. This was a case referred to us by the Citizen Advice Bureau. This is my venture thing. So when the worker, so that's that. What was concerned to me that when she raised it, she knew that she had to be paid a minimum wage because it was in a contract. And so when she raised it, her manager got very upset with her, and then the boss then phoned and terminated her on the phone. And they're claiming it was because she wasn't performing, but it just happens to be, you know, within an hour of her sort of raising that she should be paid for the hours which she worked. So that's a separate issue. So there's two issues here. One about the way that she was terminated when she was asking for her rights, which they can't do. And the second one is obviously that she was working all the hours and not paid for them.
And one of the things that makes this quite icky is, isn't this supposed to be a charitable organisation? Aren't people donating to start a good cause?
Aren't they all?
How does that work?
Exactly. So these are people who I think in this instance, they were raising money to help children in need.
Oh, right.
So, you know, it doesn't matter what the issue is, they are there. So it makes you wonder, if we're paying the worker a third, the company are contracting to another company to raise the money, so everyone is taking their cuts. And what will be interesting, I'm going to follow through, I might report back if I get that information in the next few weeks, but I think what would be interesting is, when you give them $100, how much of that's going to the actual charity itself? Because if the worker's getting paid a third, then the company who's doing it's got to get their cut. And then the company who's the main contractor to the charity must be getting their cut too. So how much is left? So that will be interesting, if anything. So I'm actually, just as we're talking now, I'm getting more interested. I'm sure that anyone who's listening to this goes, how much are they paid?
Because
it doesn't really add up, does it? You know, I don't know what it is. But so I will certainly report back on it. I hadn't come across this before, you know. It's not an area. But, you know, every morning you go to, there's people out there sort of, you know, hi, how are you? You know, and their job is the seller. But a lot of them are hitchhiking. Well, they're hitchhiking now, of course, it's a different world. But they are overseas. You know, if you ask them just who are you, you know, they'll tell you I'm German, I'm Dutch, I'm Israeli or whatever, you know. And that's a bit of pocket money for them. So that's how they breed it. And so it's very concerning. If people know anyone who's in this position, I think the important thing is to know they are hourly workers, casual employees. And if the commission is more than the minimum wage, obviously it won't apply. Right. But they cannot get paid less than the minimum wage, which is $20 an hour. So my advice to people if they're in that situation, keep your hours. If the employer doesn't keep the hours, and most of these people don't, then your hours will be what the court, if it ever got that far, would listen to. But I'm hoping in this particular case that I can resolve it pretty quickly. You know, if they're smart, they'll just fix it, you know, because it's not a great deal of money. But, you know, we don't let it go. If they want to not play straight, well, then, you know, we will pursue them. But hopefully that common sense will take place and they just need to pay what they owe this worker.
Right, so the next case we have as well, Matt, we mentioned it briefly on the show last week about a young man who works in construction.
Yeah, this is, again, I always try and think of cases we're doing which people could learn something from. So this is a case we'd done earlier. It was actually 3 years ago I did this. This was a young worker who's gay and didn't come out. I think they still use the word.
Yeah, he's coming out.
Yeah, he was not declared. Didn't want, because the site was very homophobic, a lot of gay slurs and sex. So he felt very stressed about it and didn't want to say that he was gay. But it got so bad he couldn't work there anymore. You know, just intolerable. So it all turned into a bit of a mess. And I was involved and helped him out at the time before we set this project up. You know, the YouTube project. But I helped him out and we sorted it out and they paid him some compensation and he left. What we do when you sign, when we resolve a case, you sign what they call a record of settlement. And what that is that, you know, you put out, you itemise that it's all been solved. Now, one of the things they have in it, it's full and final, so you can't litigate it again. What employers always like, it's confidential, and they have a thing in there saying you can't go and disparage each other. So you can't go and badmouth them. And for that, we normally negotiate in those agreements what you call a hurt and humiliation section. It's compensation. And the deal is that if you break the agreement, the employer can sue you to get that money back. So for those who've ever been in one of these things, if you agree to play nice, once it's done, you know, you can't talk about it. I don't like it, but, you know, that's what it is. So 3 years later, this young worker gets a letter from the lawyers, from this employer, saying you've breached the agreement, without him knowing what it was or what it is. So he then contacted me again. I said, well, you know, I'll help you, you know, because I don't like any sense of bullying. But I wrote back to the lawyers, because what they did is they phoned his employer and to get his email, his new work email. But they already had his details on the record of settlement, because on a record of settlement, you always put your phone numbers and your emails down so they can contact you, or all sides can contact each other if something goes wrong. But they didn't do it. So I saw that as a form of intimidation. You know, going to the employer, oh, we're from the, you know, his former employer and we want his email and his details. Well, they already had it. So that was concerning to me, particularly when they sent a letter from their lawyers to his work address. So that's bullying, yeah. Right? So I thought, what's all this about? So anyway, wrote back and said, what's the story? And so I got a reply just yesterday saying, from the employer, their lawyer, look, we'll drop it. So we're not pursuing it. But it worried me, like, what was all this really about? I always sit down and go, what is really going on? Anyway, so this young man contacted a few people who had worked for the company. So what concerns me, how we proceed on this, because of this, I said to the young man, I said, look, you've got to find out, there's a reason why they're writing this. Find out why. So he spoke around to his friends. What he found out was that one of his friends told him that the employer had told him that he had been sacked because he was found with drugs. Which is not true. Not true at all. Never is a drain of truth. He didn't get sacked. He resigned. You know, the employer paid out compensation. That's the layers you get to an apology.
Yeah.
Because he was bullied out of a job because he was gay.
Right.
That's the real reason. And so this worries me that the employer is going to accuse him of breaching the contract. The agreement, when in fact it looks like it's them. So maybe it was a cover-up on their part.
Right.
So that concerns me. So I only got the letter from the employer yesterday, and so I will pursue it and just see, because this can't happen, right? So what I'm going to contemplate over the next few days, I'm going to get back to them, because this young man has got a witness who spoke to the employer and was very specific. So the irony of this is that the employer wouldn't say what this young worker had said. The young worker has no idea of what he had said. And the only conversations had with anybody was with this worker who said that he'd been sacked because he had drugs in his car. So that conversation can be the only thing which reported back to the employer. The employer now has intimidated him to cover up the fact is they are the ones who breached it. So the case from 3 years ago was bullying a young gay man, and now we've got him, they're going around saying, oh, he got sacked because of drugs, right? Again, bullying. You know, unfortunately, I know that listeners will know this to be true, but bullies don't change their spots, you know, and this is another. So this young man is going overseas soon, and he, you know, and in the end, I want to help him. But what's important is justice, and I can't stand by why employers misuse their power.
Right.
And this looks like it's a pretty clear case of it. So one, we got them to stop suing him, which they were threatening to do. So that's what he wanted, and that's been fixed. But now I'm thinking, well, hold on, the shoe might come on the other foot now.
Right.
And I may go on the offensive because they have annoyed me about this.
Yeah, thanks for that, Matt. Outrageous cases, as always. And just for our listeners, know you can free phone us on 0800 368 000 or contact us via our website page, utu.org.nz, utu.org.nz, if you yourself have a case or need our help. And we also have another update for listeners later in the show, again with Matt. But as I mentioned earlier, we have a new guest on the show today. So for our next segment on the show, with me in the studio is Justine Sachs. She's an organiser for the New Zealand Nurses Organisation. Hi, Justine.
Kia ora, how are you?
Good, thank you very much for coming on the show. So I've got you on to talk to us about the nurses' strike that happened last week across the country. So for our listeners, Justine, do you want to just tell us a bit about what it was?
Yeah, so last Wednesday, nurses in our DHB across the country took industrial action. They went on strike from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. This was following on from almost a year of stalled negotiations with our district.
Yeah, yep. I didn't know that.
Yep.
It's a long time.
It is a long time, especially when you're waiting for, you know, a fair pay rise and, you know, safe staffing, which is probably the two things that our members are, you know, fighting for the most.
And you'd think there'd be the bit specific sort of public sympathy for nurses at the moment, considering the pandemic and everything that's going on.
I mean, yes, and there is, to be honest. Mm-hmm. There is. There's a lot of public support, which is awesome. So, yeah, I mean, it has been a bit of a strange situation to come off the back of COVID, where our frontline healthcare workers basically, yeah, kept the country safe.
Yep.
And COVID at bay. And then to go into negotiations with our DHBs, asking for really, I would say, the bare minimum.
So what is it you're asking for, the nurses?
So, yeah, good question. Yeah. So we sort of go through, you know, bargaining obviously comes, we ask for what the members care about. So what's widely and deeply felt. And so when we were talking to the members before we went into negotiations, the thing that came across was that we need fair pay.
Yep.
To retain and recruit nurses because it, and healthcare workers in general, because healthcare work is probably some of the hardest work you can do.
Mm.
And if there's not competitive pay, you're not going to recruit or retain those people, right? Because you can go over and do a silly office job and earn, what, like five times more?
Right.
And it's a lot easier, right? So fair pay is a big thing. Nurses in Australia earn on average 20,000 more a year.
So that's why we've been seeing in the news about nurses going over.
Well, yeah. Why wouldn't you, right?
Yeah.
And then the other thing is safe staffing. So safe staffing just literally means there's enough healthcare workers on the floor, nurses and what we call healthcare assistants, on the floor to meet patient demand, to keep patients safe and to keep healthcare
workers safe. Well, exactly. You want our nurses and our health workers to be alert and all right, and themselves to be looked after.
Well,
you would think.
I mean, it's just the basis of a healthcare system is that you actually need to be able to keep... to save lives and to have enough people to do so. So not big things. I just want to get across that these, it's not like they're not asking, the nurses aren't asking for, you know, their weight in gold. Though they should. They're asking for, you know, the sort of bare minimum to keep our healthcare system afloat.
Okay, well, holistically speaking then, Justine, just so we have a better understanding, what would you say the state of the healthcare system in New Zealand is?
That's a really good question. And I would say the answer to that question is it's in a state of crisis. And it's been in a state of crisis for quite some time now. I can't lay the blame solely at the feet of the current government.
Mm-hmm.
I think we would say that that health has been underfunded and under-resourced systematically for going on, you know, successive governments. And healthcare workers have just stretched. They've stretched to make up for the shortfalls in funding. And they've just reached a point because they care, right? Because they care about their patients and they care about our well-being. And so they've stretched themselves to breaking point. And that's where we are now, where we just have a health system. And I think people kind of know. They kind of know that the healthcare system just isn't working. It's not a life-affirming system, right?
Mm.
It's an ambulance at the bottom of the cliff. It's not well-funded. It's not, you know, our buildings, our infrastructure, not in terms of infrastructure, and certainly not in terms of staffing. And I just think that the impact that that has on patients and our health staff is just, you know, just unjustifiable, and it needs to change. And that is why our members are taking action.
This is making me angry and sad. So, but also, when I was doing a little bit of research before this interview, I found that in 2018, there was apparently an accord on safe staffing signed, and one of the reasons also the nurses are upset and striking, of course, is because this hasn't been fully implemented like it's supposed to have been.
So, safe staffing, the idea that safe staffing is part of our negotiations says something in and of itself, right? Mm. You shouldn't have to bargain for safe staffing. In other industries, it's a mandatory legislative minimum. You have to provide a safe workplace. So the fact that we even have to sit in the room with, you know, the DHBs and say we need to be safe at work, we need to ensure that patients are also safe, is ridiculous. And it shows a kind of gap, I think, in health and safety legislation, but that's just
feels like it's a lack of respect as well.
Yeah, totally. You know, like, even the fact that nurses have to bargain for safe staffing, right? So you know, nurses won that last time. They won that because, as I said, probably the most important thing of all is safe staffing.
Yeah, of course.
Safe staffing is life and death, right? It's really, really, really important. And so, so they won the accord, and that was a really big win, actually. You know, I'm not going to take away from that win because nurses took action, and that was what they got out of it, is an accord to ensure that there were processes to ensure that, you know, we had enough capacity, enough staff to meet patient demand. But the thing is, it's now we're in June 2021, and many DHBs have not met the deadline. And other DHBs are have partially, but haven't aren't fully there yet. And so it feels, I think for our members, it feels like DHBs haven't met their side of that.
Right.
And so that's why this time around, what we're asking for is actual enforcement mechanisms to ensure that if DHBs don't meet their commitments around safe staffing, that there are consequences. Because it's one thing to make a promise, but it's another thing if there is nothing going to happen if you don't meet that, right?
So then what would you sum up the key points of this current strike, Phil?
The key points is, probably safe staffing is the most important thing. It's that there are penalties, there are consequences if a DHB does not provide safe staffing, adequate staffing.
Okay.
And the other thing is fair pay. And the fair pay is because you cannot expect people to do one of the hardest jobs out there. I mean, I'm serious. Mm. One of the hardest jobs out there.
Oh, of course. With massive respect for what you do.
For the pay that they get. Okay. Yeah. We have healthcare assistants. Healthcare assistants, well, it's in the name. They are they assist our other healthcare workers, and they do a really amazing job. They're on their feet, you know, often 12-hour shifts, running all over the hospital. Mm. They also watch patients, et cetera, et cetera. They start on the minimum wage. Their actual starting rate is below the minimum wage. The DHB has had to increase their rate once the minimum wage went up. They can go into aged care, they can go into private healthcare and earn 70% more.
17%. Is that where the number comes from in terms of why you're asking?
Yeah. So you saw the Prime Minister in the media saying, you know, we are constrained and we have to be reasonable, and you know, the nurses
are constrained for everything about COVID at the moment. That's the line we always hear.
Yeah, that's the line. Better things aren't possible. sorry. So this Prime Minister said 17%. You know, they're asking for 17%. How absurd. I would say, Prime Minister, we are asking for 17%. We're asking for 17% for the healthcare workers who are earning 17% less than they would if they went across the road to an aged care provider. Mm. Okay, how are our DHBs, our hospitals, supposed to recruit and retain people, but they're paying them 17% less than they would earn in aged care and private healthcare? Okay, so we're asking for 17% for our healthcare assistants. And because of the relativities, we would assume that everybody else would go up as well. That's a good thing. When we raise the bottom, we raise the top, right? On a personal level, you know, I can't speak for the union, but on a personal level, I find the Prime Minister's incredulousness at the 17% number just insulting, given the state of it, right? And so the answer to her sort of incredulous statement is, that is what
I love it. So as a sort of a final question for our listeners, and also as an aspiring union, do you want to tell us a little bit about what it's like in the strike, what it's like on the front line? So how did it go? What was the feel and the mood?
It was like amazing. You know, I think the mood was emotional. It was, felt the collective power of our members, and that was a sight to sort of see, I guess. I was at ADHB and I helped at 11 a.m. You know, I was there to lead them out. as they took action. You could just feel the righteousness, you know, like their sense, and them feeling like understanding their own power.
Yeah.
You know, and so we walked out single file out of the hospital, mm-hmm. and people were clapping for the workers as they went off. They were all wearing purple, and you know, that is amazing because, you know, in day-to-day life, sometimes at work, you feel really disempowered, mm. and you feel like you don't have a voice.
And, well, that's not surprising, considering the conditions we've just discussed.
And all workers, I would say, right?
Yeah,
you
true.
Know,
yep.
all workers, most, you know, unless you've got a really organized workplace. So, you know, you could really see people find their voice, and we had some amazing people who spoke, delegates, workplace leaders at the rally, and you know, we had thousands of people there. They were all dressed in purple, so they were coordinated, they were organized. Yeah. It was awesome. Yeah, it was honestly just so inspiring. It was probably one of the best actions I've ever been to, and the public support was also amazing. You know, you really could feel that the public was behind us, which you know, we really appreciated that solidarity. And you know, I said at the time, I said, you know, because I was emceeing, and I said, you know, I know that you guys aren't going to give up. Mm. I know that you're in this for the long haul. And, you know, that's what I could sense, is that they know that they are fighting for our health care. They're fighting for us, and they're fighting for themselves. And they feel ready, you know, to take it up, to take on that mahi. So exciting.
So then will there be further strike action?
You know, anything is possible. I can't say that there will be. It's up to the members to decide what happens next. I think what the main thing is that we're back in negotiations, and that, you know, hopefully we're able to come. That government is, and the DHBs are able to offer nurses something that meets their very, very basic and you know, demands and needs, really. So I can't say up to the members, but you know, let's see the government actually come to the table and offer something, give an offer that's not an April Fool's joke. That's what they call the 1.38%, April's Fool's offer. Yeah, because it did come out in April 1st.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Justine, for coming and talking with us on the show today. Really enjoyed having you on.
So awesome to hear about the work the New Zealand Nurses Organisation does. You know, the union's about 46,000 strong. You know, they have public support, and as an aspiring union ourselves, hearing about the collective action taking place and the energy on the picket lines and the genuine drive for improvement, it's great. So we wish you all the best.
Okay, so we're back again with Matt. Now we're going to talk about another case, this one about, we can actually name it now, can't we? The fish and chippery shop in Grey Lynn, which we talked about a few weeks ago, but it's actually been in the news recently, which is why we're now able to name names. So, Matt, would you like to tell us what's happening there?
Yeah, well, this is one that'll give you a headache. It's given me a headache. This started off, this is the, for those who know, there's a little shop, fish and chip shop, called the Fish and Chippery in Grey Lynn. And it's part of, initially it was part of 7 stores, but it looks like it's down to 3.
Right.
So it affects all 3 stores, but the main store is in Grey Lynn. This has been in the press now, in the Herald, a bit of a feature on it all, and it's in with the assignees and receivers and liquidators and all sorts of things. So the whole thing's a bit of a mess. But these are workers who work for the owner. Well, the chip shop, it's a question now is who the owner was.
Yeah, it's quite confusing when you...
Yes, I'm going to try and kind of be simple, right? So, this is a story why people they should be interested in this sort of thing is about when you are employed by somebody, these people went for a month or so, almost all of them, not getting paid. And then they'd ask, and the owner, well, the manager, kept giving them bits of cash every now and then. Right? What happens when an owner can't pay you and starts paying you in cash from time to time? That company is either in deep, deep trouble, is not going to survive, or the owner or the person who's running it is taking money from out of the company, and for debts or for whatever reasons, or both.
Right.
So get onto it pretty quick. You know, the first time you don't get paid in your first week, right, that's trouble. That's trouble. Don't wait. You know, so what you've got are the, you know, con men or con woman who will go, oh, I'll get to you next week, mate. Oh, I'm a bit short this week. Well, 2 weeks, still haven't been paid. You know what's going on. Yeah. So here's the thing. This is a company, very convoluted, so let's try and make it short, right? This guy who's running it, his name is Aaron Drever. He's a, which we didn't know at the time, he's a bankrupt. I mean, he's not allowed to run a company. So his girlfriend and his girlfriend's mother are on the books as the owners and shareholders, right? But it's him. And he's not supposed to be running a company or be involved in the management of a company. All that own. So he's got this sort of front from all accounts. He got himself a partner in Australia, and the partner thought he had bought the businesses, but the paperwork was never signed. Oh. And the guy in Australia kept getting asked to put in the money, you know, put money here, money there. And he got to the point where he had enough and wasn't getting the information he wanted. So he's called in the liquidators. And then everyone has gone to ground, or he's gone to ground. The papers are published now that Aaron Driver has a history.
Yes.
Of a ban from selling real estate.
Yes.
There's millions which he's accused of mishandling or taking or whatever. So it's all a bit messy, right? And so what we're doing is that every time we've contacted him, we've got contact with 10 of the workers there who haven't been paid anywhere between $4,500 and $200. So the workers want justice and we are in contact with them. And I think it gets to the receiver now. The receiver can have him put in jail, you know, and I think that's where it could go. But I've reached out to Alan Dreeve and said, look, you know, I've got a responsibility to these workers. Can you pay them? I started this before the whole thing went into liquidation. So he, like all good people like this fellow, they go, yes, I want to sort it out, Every time I said, look, I want to have a meeting. Oh, send me that. So it's all playing for time. So each time I've given him a deadline, he's agreed and then not turned up. So this just goes on. I think, you know, we know what's going on. So we're in contact with the receiver and they believe this is just straight out fraud. Our concern is obviously for the 10 workers haven't been got paid. And they vary from amounts from $200 to $4,500. So I've got to try and see if we can get the money before it gets the receiver. But in the unlikely chance that happens, it's that we will now file with the receiver and get these workers, hopefully get some of their money when they wind the company up. But this is a wider issue. It's one of the more complicated, because it's a bit hard when someone is deliberately was accused deliberately fleecing the company and taking money from out of the till and not paying the workers. But that hopefully doesn't happen to other people. So with people who are listening to this is my message to you with people like it. If you're not getting paid, something dodgy is going on.
Yeah.
Right? If they say, look, I'm just short of cash this week, get it. But if they don't pay by the second week, this game is over. Right, you should not hope that if I keep working for nothing, it's all going to come right without your employer disclosing it. But what you need to understand, this is theft. You know, you have done those hours. That money now is yours. That is the legal agreement of which you have made. So your employer is stealing from you and it's your money. But if you leave it too long, it builds up too high. You have put a lot of time in for nothing. And the most we can do is we can't get it off the employer through legal means. If they've got the money, it's easy. But on this occasion, once it's liquidated, right, we have to join the queue.
Yeah.
And you won't get most of that money, unfortunately.
Yeah. So for our listeners, if anyone you know or you yourself are in a similar situation, you can call us on our free phone number. That's 0800 368 000, or you can go onto our website utu.org.nz, utu.org.nz, and contact us that way. So thank you for that, Matt.
You're welcome.
For this next segment, it's called Ask Arman. So Arman here is admitted as a barrister and a solicitor of the High Court. He's an excellent researcher. He's also an advocate for the Utu for Workers Union.
Thank you very much for that very kind introduction, Izzy.
In this segment, I ask Arman employment advice on minimum employment rights and learn a thing or two, and hopefully our listeners do as well. So we've had one of these segments before a couple of weeks ago. But first, Arman, you told me you wanted to clarify something about holiday pay entitlements that we covered.
Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to clarify because the legislation can be quite confusing. So regarding holiday pay, And the 8% entitlements. So that's for casual workers.
Okay.
And that's, so if you're a casual worker, you should receive 8% in addition to your salary with each paycheck. And if you're a part-time or full-time worker, you become entitled to annual leave after 12 months of working.
Okay.
So if you're a part-time or full-time worker, you'll be entitled to 4 weeks of ordinary pay after 12 months of working. And if you're a casual worker, you get 8% of your pay with every paycheck. You will never get less than 8% holiday pay. And if you do get less than 8%, then that is a breach of your employment rights.
Okay, awesome. Well, thanks for that. The law is definitely confusing, and unfortunately, that's often used as an attempt by employers to avoid paying out minimum entitlements.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for our listeners, we do often come across cases where there have been unpaid holiday wages or annual leave, and we can definitely help anyone out with that come forward.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So something that should cover your holiday pay entitlements and is crucial and legally required for any employee is a contract. So it's amazing how often we come across employers who do not provide a contract for their workers. So, Armand, what should a contract, also known as an individual employment agreement, cover?
Yeah, so first of all, you must be given a contract and it must be in writing. So that's a requirement.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to that, there are a few sort of details that are necessary, and that's prescribed by the Employment Relations Act. So the names of your employer, the name of the employee, a description of the work to be performed, an indication of where the work will be performed, agreed hours of work. And if there's not a specific agreed hours, then there needs to be an indication, maybe in terms of what the range of hours would be. We need to have the wages or salary clearly stated. And there must be a plain language explanation for how employment relationship problems are to be dealt with. And there must be reference to the fact that you can raise a personal grievance within 90 days of your employment ending. If, for whatever reason, any of these things are not in your contract, then that is a breach by the employer of their legal obligations.
Okay, so it must contain at least these things, but can it include more?
Yep, it can include more as well, but those things are requirements.
Okay.
As long as anything else that is included doesn't contradict the Employment Relations Act or any other law, then it's all good. And, you know, for anybody or any employer who finds the task of writing a contract to be quite daunting, fortunately, the employment.govt website has a really helpful contract builder function. It's got a template. You just need to plug in key names, figures, things like that. Shouldn't take you more than 30 minutes. You know, the worker employee can help with that too. So really no excuses for not getting a proper contract.
Right. And it's also can be a useful resource for workers.
Absolutely.
To see what's required and what they're legally entitled to. Okay, so what happens if a worker does something or at work, or a boss requires them to do something that breaches their contract, like working over hours, for instance? What happens then?
Yeah, so you can work above the hours you're contracted to, but you need to be fairly compensated for it. And you mentioned breach, and if your employer does anything to breach the contract or your fundamental employment rights, the key thing to do, and I cannot emphasize this enough, is to document it. Write a note in your phone, take a screenshot, maybe make a recording, just keep the evidence.
Evidence is crucial.
Evidence is crucial, and that will form the basis of any claim.
Yep. So with all this in mind and the breaches that do often occur, what advice might you give to a worker concerned that their employment rights are not being met?
Yeah, so I'll give an example. So an important issue that we do see is workplace harassment or bullying. And unfortunately, often these situations kind of end up in a he said, she said scenario where you have the boss saying one thing and essentially denying what's happened, and the worker kind of saying what's happened. And so the key thing, again, is just documentation and keeping that evidence. So it can be a paper trail, anything from emails, texts, recordings, all of that is important. we know, like, we definitely understand that in the heat of the moment when you're experiencing something like that, it can be very hard to compartmentalize and you know, take a screenshot or start recording on your phone. But it's really pivotal that you do, because that's what will show a pattern of conduct, and that is what will detract from the legitimacy of what the employer is saying. On top of that, just keeping a weekly diary, just making some kind of note at the time that it occurs, that's also really persuasive. Even if you don't have, say they told you something really hurtful and you didn't record it, but just make a note of it, and then you can show, on this day, I made a note that this thing occurred, that as well will be really persuasive.
And we as a union can do much more for you, the more evidence you have.
It helps us. Yeah. It helps us as well.
All right. Well, thank you, Arman. That was enlightening, as always.
Always a pleasure, Izzy.
So Arman is one of our worker advocates at Utu for Workers Union. So feel free to contact us if you have any questions. You can contact us on our website. That's utu.org.nz. Or you can free phone us, 0800 368 000. And we'll get back to you all, endeavour to get your questions into the show as well.
Yeah, we're happy to talk about it on the next episode.
So as always, we wrap up the show here at Utu for Workers Hour with a song of struggle, a song that I research and highlight as being part of the long history of both the workers' movement and all socially progressive movements. So by looking into and celebrating these songs, we can hopefully, you know, listen in solidarity and remember our part in the history of today. Okay, so this week's song is from 2016. It won a Grammy Award for Best Music Video and is by the legend herself, Beyoncé. It was the lead single on the seminal album Lemonade, and in it, Beyoncé celebrates her culture, identity, and success as a black woman from the US South. So the day after it was released, Beyoncé gave an absolutely legendary Super Bowl halftime performance. Seriously, look it up if you've got some time on your hands. It's the 2016 Super Bowl 50 halftime show. Bruno Mars also makes an appearance, so it's amazing live performances. You won't be disappointed. But both the song, the video, and the Super Bowl performance sparked a controversy amongst political commentators, conservative commentators and politicians, saying that Beyoncé was spreading anti-police messages. That's probably from the police car submerged in water and sinking, with Beyoncé sitting on top of it at the beginning of the music video. Also, definitely watch the music video. You know, I'm giving you a lot of video recommendations here. And also accusations of anti-American messages, which, as anyone can tell you, is true in the sense that the lyrics do highlight and call out the broken elements of a systemically racist nation. Alongside the controversy, it sparked many a discussion on the issues addressed in the song and video, and it was adopted as an anthem by the Black Lives Matter movement and the Women's March. It's a very strong feminist piece also. It was released at the beginning of Black History Month, the day before Trayvon Martin's birthday. So Trayvon Martin was a 17-year-old African-American who was shot and killed in 2012 by a member of the public who was originally able to claim self-defense because Trayvon Martin, quote, looked suspicious. And Formation was also released the day before Sandra Bland's birthday, a 28-year-old African-American woman who was found hanged in a jail cell in Texas after she was arrested during a pretextual traffic stop. The death was ruled a suicide and sparked investigations as to the lack of proper safety checks, mental health checks, and the involvement of racial bias. There's a lot to unpack surrounding Beyoncé's Formation, and it's definitely imbued in the history of social struggle and the fight for justice. So, a big thank you to our guests today, Justine and Arman. A big thank you to our listeners, as always. Remember, you can contact us anytime on our free phone, 0800 368 000, or visit our website, utu.org.nz, utu.org.nz. We'll also find out more about us and be able to contact us. Let us know if you have a case of your own. There's an easy-to-use case assessment form on the site, found at utu.org.nz/help. You can also become a member with the Utu for Workers Union. Membership is open to everyone, be they an employee, a subcontractor, self-employed, students, retirees, if you're not in paid work. And of course, as the Nurses Union have shown us, and as Justine rightly pointed out earlier in the show, the more people who join us, the stronger we become, the better we can protect our workers and set the agenda. So until next week, I've been your host, Izzy Kane, and here is Beyoncé's R&B smash hit, Formation.
What happened at the New Orleans? I'm back. I'm popular, the man.
Y'all haters corny with that Illuminati mess. Paparazzi, catch my fly and my cocky fresh. I'm so reckless when I rock my Givenchy dress. I'm so possessive, so I rock his rock necklaces. My daddy Alabama, mama Louisiana. You mix that Negro with that Creole, make a Texas Bama. The country
out there.
I got hot sauce in my bag. Swag.
Ooh, yeah, baby. Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. I like that.
Oh, Miss B, I know you came to slay. Don't play with the girls, baby. I like cornbreads and collard greens. Oh, yes. You best to believe it.
Y'all haters corny with that Illuminati mess. Paparazzi, catch my fly and my cocky fresh. I'm so reckless when I rock my Givenchy dress. I'm so possessive, so I rock his rock necklaces. My daddy Alabama, mama Louisiana. You mix that Negro with that Creole, make a Texas Bama.
I got hot sauce in my bag.
I see it, I want it. I turn yellow, want it. I dream it, I work hard. I run till I own it. I twirl on the middle. I wind on alligators. Get up, get up. Lino with the steelo. And Cuervo and Odita. I go out, I go out. I go hard, I go hard. Yeah, what's mine? Hey, what's mine? I'm a star, I'm a star. Cause I slay, I slay, I slay. Formation. I say, cool to me, you got some coordination. I say, slay, slay, or you get eliminated. When it call me good, I take it, that's the real I put. When it call me good, I take it, that's the real I put. If it hit it right, I might take him on a flight on my chopper. Drop him off at the mall, let him buy some J's, let him shop up.
I might get your song played on the radio station.
Cause I slay.
I might get your song played on the radio station.
Cause I slay. You just might be a black Bill Gates in the making.
Cause I slay.
I just might be a black Bill Gates in the making.
I see it. I want it.
Want it.
Yellow money.
Okay, ladies, now let's get information. I slay. Okay, ladies, now let's get information. You know you that bitch when you cause all this conversation. Always stay gracious. Best revenge is your paper.